This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. There's a debate going on among those who run zoos that raises a fundamental question. What exactly are zoos for? Since they were first created, zoos have sought to balance recreation with education and science. But in recent years, zoos have been working to become more entertaining. Zoo directors argue that to take care of the animals, they must cater to the people who pay for their upkeep. From Kansas City, NPR's Greg Allam reports.
Kansas City Zoo has had ups and downs over the past century, but by just about any measure, the last few years have been low points. In 2001, understaffing and outdated facilities almost cost the zoo its accreditation. A series of animal deaths there underscored the sense of crisis. But it was the attendance figures that really told the tale. Only about 420,000 people visited the zoo last year. That's down by 300,000 in just 5 years. In the zoo's Australia section, parrots and cockatoos are on display, along with dingoes, kangaroos, and wallabies. Shelley Dupre visits the zoo several times a year and says it's better than many in Kansas City think it is.
There's lots of things to see. There's lots of different animals. They've got great exhibits for them, and they try to keep them in their natural habitat. So I don't think it needs the bad rap that it gets.
Like many zoos, Kansas City spent a lot of money over the last few decades replacing its old confining cages with exhibits that attempt to replicate an animal's wild habitat. In the mid-1990s, Kansas City spent a whopping $60 million on the zoo's Africa attraction, a sprawling exhibit that placed the animals in a natural and spacious setting. But zoo director Randy Wisthoff says the animals liked it so much they hid from the visitors.
A lot of times during the day, the animals are so far away that people just don't feel they're connecting with them at all. A lot of people say, well, this is just like going to Africa. Well, most of the people in Kansas City don't want to go to Africa.
Wisthoff says the zoo has also failed visitors in another way. It hasn't given them a reason to come back. Until recently, when it was turned over to a private nonprofit foundation, this zoo was part of the city's Parks and Recreation Department. Wisthoff says that made it difficult to raise money for the big new exhibits that he says zoos must now open every few years.
That's how theme parks operate. Disney operates that way, that you have to keep bringing something new to the public because the public is very fickle with an institution, and public just doesn't come back to see the same old thing again and again and again.
In terms of attendance, America's top zoo is Disney's Animal Kingdom in Orlando. But just a three-hour drive from Kansas City, another zoo is providing a model for success. Omaha's Henry Durley Zoo has long been an elite institution, with a yearly attendance of about 1.5 million. One reason for its success has been a series of impressive new attractions. In the course of a decade, it opened a jungle exhibit, an aquarium, and more recently, this huge geodesic dome, housing a 42,000-square-foot desert exhibit. Inside, a waterfall gives way to a 30-foot mountain of sand. The zoo's assistant director, Doug Armstrong, says the idea was to bring the visitor to the Namibian desert.
We've got rock faces that reflect the geology that you'd see if you were in the Namibian desert. We've got species in here as well as plant species that are all live. We don't do artificial greenery, so these are all live plants that you'd find in that habitat.
Along with its popular exhibits, Omaha Zoo is known worldwide for its conservation work, especially with tigers. For Armstrong and many others who run the nation's zoos, conservation is their motivation for going to work each day. They say with habitat in the wild disappearing at ever faster rates, zoos may ultimately provide the only viable breeding populations of endangered animals. But clearly, the thousands of people who visit Omaha Zoo each day come here not for conservation, but to be entertained. And Armstrong says, as a scientist, that was at first hard for him to accept.
It took me a couple of years to figure out that if the zoo isn't a successful business, it doesn't exist, and it can't do the conservation, and it can't do the education.
Jeffrey Heisen says this tug of war between science and spectacle has been going on at zoos now for well over a century. Heisen is an assistant professor of history at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia who's writing a cultural history of zoos. The evolution of zoos from 19th century menageries into 21st century conservation centers has bolstered their public image. But he says the main benefits of conservation, education, and naturalistic exhibits is that they make the visitors feel better about the zoo itself.
Well, yes, maybe it's not right, ethically speaking, to hold this lion here, but at least there's this conservation work that's going on in the wild. At least there's this research that's going on at the zoo. at least there is this naturalistic exhibit to keep the animal, quote-unquote, happy.
Clearly, many zoos are doing something right. Each year, they draw more attendance than Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA combined. Heisen says with an eye toward interaction, zoos are returning to a practice they only recently held in scientific disdain, allowing people to feed the animals. At Kansas City Zoo, director Randy Wistoff has big plans to bring back the crowds here, and one of the first is an exhibit where visitors will be able to buy fruit and nectar to feed a flock of Australian lorikeets. It may not promote conservation, but it sure sounds like fun. Greg Allen, NPR News, Kansas City.
Photographs of exhibits at the Kansas City Zoo and Omaha's Henry Doorly Zoo are at npr.org.